Hello and welcome to our latest in our series of risk leaders interviews. Today we have Dirk Wegener, chairman of FIRMA, the European Federation of Risk Management Associations, ahead of FIRMA's forum in Copenhagen. I'm really looking forward to this event because it's the first time that the European risk management community will be able to gather physically and have a good catch up. There's obviously going to be some very big themes discussed at the forum. A hell of a lot has happened in the last couple of years, and the profession has evolved to an extent. So I'm just going to kick off by asking Dirk, what are going to be the main themes of the forum? What do you hope to achieve? And what do you think are going to be the key topics of discussion this year?
Hello, Adrian. Firstly, thanks for having me and giving me the opportunity to speak to you. The theme we have chosen for 2022 is transitioning together risk leadership in a fast changing world. We see this as a natural progression from our previous theme from risk to resilience, which we had in Berlin 3 years ago. After resilience, we want to discuss the transition. We are living through a period of great change, including our business models and working patterns. More uncertainty is a natural consequence, and making uncertainty measurable and manageable is what risk managers do. Transitioning together is also an acknowledgement that sharing knowledge, best practices and skills is the way we make our societies and our organizations sustainable in this new period of disruption. Risk leadership in a fast-changing world is to stress that risk management is our compass to achieve what we all want, a more human, greener, and digital planet. Of course, if we focus on the FIRMA Forum, then we are also looking forward to this. And after 3 years of COVID, and we had tried to do some online events in between, but I mean, of course, to meet in person again is a big opportunity. And we are looking forward to that. We are expecting a high level experts, inspiring speakers, and innovative exhibitors. The forum is an ideal environment to meet and share experience with more than 1,500 risk professionals from across Europe and further away. So it will be about inspirations. It will be about learning and professional development.
So now, I mean, carry on, Dirk. Sorry. The thing I'm really thinking, I mean, it's been a pretty dramatic 3 years. The risk management community, along with all of us, has had to cope with COVID, and then, of course, Russia's invasion of Ukraine and the huge implications of that, which is ongoing. I mean, how has the profession evolved and changed over this period of remote working? How have European risk managers had to adapt, and what new skills and responsibilities have they taken on?
Yeah, right. I think the answer to this is a little bit twofold, right? On one hand, you have the insurance management piece. For them, it was really a hard time. Also, to the extent that they had to communicate quite disappointing messages to their boards.
Yeah.
COVID-19 revealed an enormous gap in insurance cover for, in particular, non-damage business interruption losses. And insurers denied the vast majority of claims submitted by businesses for losses associated with workplace closures. So a lot of disappointing messages to deliver. Even more, since then, insurers have restricted the coverage, tightening wordings, special exclusions, and so forth, which makes it even less attractive to buy insurance, which again is a difficult message to communicate. To the contrast, for risk managers, it was, of course, unfortunately, but crises like these are an opportunity to show up, to demonstrate their capabilities, to show what they can do and how important they are for their companies. So after the pandemic, FIRMA did a survey with McKinsey And this survey revealed that 90% of the business leaders and risk managers said that the global pandemic made actually risk management and resilience more important to their organizations. So from a risk management point of view, even again, such pandemic is a very unfortunate event. It was an opportunity to demonstrate the capabilities and demonstrate the importance of the profession. I think the war in the Ukraine, i.e. the aggression of Russia against the Ukraine, in that respect, had a similar outcome. Again, you had to report to your management that unfortunately war-related losses are typically not insured. But at the same time, consequences like value chain disruptions are opportunities, maybe not just only for the risk management function, but also for production, procurement, and so forth, to demonstrate how a proper risk management system can actually contribute to keep things ongoing and to somehow manage the unfortunate consequences for your production and so forth a little bit better.
Yeah, I mean, that's basically supply chain risk, which is, as you say, again, it's another pure risk management issue where risk managers have been able to rise to the fore and at the same time trying to deal with the lack of coverage. There is quite an evolution going on there. Do you think that the rapid and sometimes brutal hardening in lines like, just focusing on the insurance side for a moment, like cyber and D&O, was this justified? And could it have been done better? how do you feel the market sort of?
Yeah, I think, you know, the hard market is one thing, and it was certainly accelerated by the pandemic, and it's again accelerated by the war against the Ukraine. However, the hard market was already started before.
Yeah.
And insurers constantly argued that the losses were simply too high, the loss ratios were just too poor to allow this to continue in that way. I mean, we have gone through cycles of hardening markets before, right?
Yeah.
So as such, it's not a new experience. However, and this was also clearly documented in the outcome of our European Risk Manager Survey this year, the frustration with the insurance market is apparently very high. Mm-hmm. 78% reported a significant impact from increased insurance pricing, and 71 in terms of reduced capacity. So this time it was about a double dip in reduced capacities as well as increase of premiums. And we also have seen limitations, further exclusions in the renewals, which again makes the value of the insurance cover less than it was before. Now, I think in that respect, it was really, as you said, a brutal hardening.
Yeah.
When it comes to cyber, I think there is some more frustration because cyber is a pretty newly introduced insurance product. It was heavily promoted by insurers for a couple of years now.
Yeah.
And we heard complaints that it was not well received by clients, by commercial insurance buyers, in the sense that the penetration rate, if you like, was not very high and not sufficient. And when the buyer started to buy, now all of a sudden the coverage is restricted and it might be even or taken away completely. Some insurers have left the market. And this is, of course, not good if you have to go back to if you have promoted something just recently as something you want your company to buy, and then pretty soon after you have to go back and say, unfortunately, it's not available any longer. So that's of course not good.
Yeah.
Also, I think even though we hear day by day that cyber attacks are increasing in numbers and also increasing in impact, and there have been of course dramatic examples of the impact of a cyber attack, not just to one company but also to many at the same time. Mm-hmm. This is one thing. On the other hand, when you really look into the details, and our member association AMRE did that with their project Lucy.
Yeah.
It seems that the market, i.e. premium versus losses, insured losses, is not, let's say, dramatically underpriced, if not to say it looks like as if the pricing, the former pricing, if you like, before the hardening was quite okay. Mm-hmm. to pay the losses. We are still about to try to, let's say, reconfirm these findings in other European markets. This is not yet done, mm-hmm. but just as a hint, it is interesting if that kind of a pretty big market where cyber insurance is, of course, more at the forefront maybe than in other markets, the economical situation seems quite satisfied or satisfying for the insurers.
Yeah,
and then D&O. I mean, I must say D&O, and this is maybe not an official firmer position.
Yeah.
But my personal observation when it comes to D&O is that, you know, D&O seems to be like the last resort for everything. I mean, whatever happens, if it is the pandemic, if it is the war, if it is supply chain issues like the closure of the Suez Canal. It takes minutes, and then someone might say, "Oh, this is going to be a huge D&O exposure."
Yeah.
And you really wonder if this is helpful, to be honest. Yeah. I mean, of course, in theory, management has to manage all issues, whatever is coming up. And of course, they can make failures in doing so. But likewise, just that there is a risk and this risk materializes, unfortunately, does not automatically trigger a liability of the management.
No.
And there is much ground in between. And this is not, from my understanding, rightly communicated, if you like. So I think when it comes to D&O, there is a lot of talk. And again, it remains to be seen if all of these theoretical exposures will ever turn into insured losses.
Yeah, that is the key point here, isn't it? Because you have a perception, and I did a round table with the GVNW committee yesterday, and they talked about this point. They were kind of almost blaming myself and Herbert Frommer for writing about all these theoretical risks and therefore giving the insurers an excuse to maintain the hardening. And there is a point there. Because actually, from your perspective as an individual corporate insurance buyer, what you really want your coverage, price, capacity, terms to be based upon is your real exposure, your experience, not the supposed global exposure that could happen at some time in the future. And this is a frustration, isn't it? I think a lot of firmer members are not happy because that they're not facing an offer from their carriers based upon their actual risk management quality and loss prevention activity and the numbers.
And again, the impression you may have if you read articles like this.
Yeah.
And to be fair, I mean, it's coming from law firms, it's coming from insurers, it's coming from brokers.
Yeah.
If you read these articles, your first impression is, it's almost impossible to do something against it. And that's just not true. And believe me, companies are doing a lot to manage these challenges, fully acknowledging that these challenges do exist. But there are, you know, if it's impossible to manage, then there is no liability.
Yep.
Right. So to phrase it very simple, I mean, if the situation would be like some of these articles suggest, then it would be a bonanza for the D&O insurers, because there will be absolutely no liability. And so but I mean, this is, again, as I said, that's not Firma's official opinion.
No,
that's more what I think.
Yeah. Well, and it's been expressed to me by many of your peers across Europe, as I said, particularly in Germany yesterday. One key question is if we are to assume that the new obsession with exclusions is going to continue, if we are to assume that the inflationary outlook, the economic outlook is going to not really get any better sometime soon, and therefore assume that this hard market is not going to suddenly change, what does Firma, what do you advise risk managers to do to cope with this situation? I mean, there's simple things maybe, such as retain more risk, use your captives, which is something obviously we'd get onto later. But also maybe new options such as parametric covers, the ILS market. Maybe there's an opportunity to create a new mutual in different lines, whether by a sector approach or more generally. What would be your advice to members?
Yeah, there's one thing, the market is hardening, but the economics of buying insurance might not as favorable as in the past. That's one thing. The other thing is that you really have a protection gap in the sense that your risks are evolving, going into different categories, which have not existed, at least not in practical terms in the past. And you have the sense that the insurance market is not really keeping pace, if you like, with this development. So in that sense, there is a growing protection gap. Even if you were willing to pay a reasonable premium, there's just no offering. So that's a little bit two separate categories. I think in that sense, a protection gap is certainly a concern. Again, going back to our survey, the European Risk Manager Survey, 41 of the surveyed risk managers assess that they believe or expect that some of their activities and locations will become uninsurable in the future, which gives you a little bit a hint of how confident the risk managers, insurance managers are that insurance, the traditional commercial insurance, is the answer, so to speak, to transfer risks. And in that sense, of course, we are absolutely delighted or absolutely appreciate the fact that the market is working also in a sense that people trying to find new solutions, which might be an answer, maybe not a perfect answer, but an answer to some of these problems. And of course, parametric is one of the things. ILS solutions, I think, for the individual commercial insurance buyer is a little bit difficult to organize and to achieve, but you know, you never know. And mutuals are, of course, another opportunity. Time will tell. Retain more risk is, of course, something which is widely used already.
Yeah.
So again, in the survey, risk managers said that they were considering a higher risk retention by 73%.
Okay.
Versus alternative risk transfer vehicles is also attractive and used, but only by 29%. So that gives you a little bit of an indication. Use of captives is widely discussed on the market right now.
Yeah.
Again, it's quite burdensome to set a captive up. But if you have a captive, it's of course a tool which can be more used than in the past to basically respond to the hardening market and also potentially to coverage gaps. So yeah. The answer is absolutely yes, even though it's also very clear that only based on the individual situation of the corporate, the perfect answer can be found.
Yeah.
And it's a question of your own priorities as well, and of course capabilities also financially. So I think that's a little bit the unfortunate part of this message, that most of these measures are in reality pretty much limited to very large corporates.
Yeah.
So for SMEs, the situation is therefore more difficult, I would think.
Yep.
And therefore, we must not rest here and must not stop here to still, can I say that, try to push and make sure that also the offerings for traditional insurance, if you like, are becoming better again going forward.
Yeah. Well, yes, that's definitely the point on the SMEs is critical, isn't it? I mean, you, FIRMA and its member associations are really do need to sort of bang the drum, fight the battle for companies that aren't members of them, because they, you know, they represent the top of the pile, so to speak. I know AMRE has certainly been working hard on that front. It'd be interesting to catch up with them about how they're doing with their captive proposals at government level.
Yeah.
Talking of governments, obviously at the height of the pandemic, when we were all forced into lockdown, etc., there was much talk, wasn't there, about public-private partnerships to deal with the pandemic because of the failure of business interruption insurance to respond. It was also suggested that such vehicles could be extended to include other systemic risks such as cyber, maybe natural catastrophes. I believe, I mean, you opened some discussions with at the EC level. Has there been any progress to report on that, do you think? Or do you think that the EC and the national governments are just too wrapped up in the economic crisis to think long term in that way?
Yeah, I think that's unfortunately right. I think the momentum is unfortunately lost because of other crises, as you just mentioned, for EU member states. And the European Commission is dealing with things like war in Ukraine, energy crisis, inflation, and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
Having said that, we are still pushing for this. Just recently, end of June, I was invited to participate in a roundtable discussion hosted by OECD to exactly talk about this point.
Yeah.
What can be the contribution of the insurance market to, in the future, resolve or balance the impact of a pandemic? And the pandemic was more an example of a systemic risk than that the entire discussion was limited to pandemic only.
Yeah.
And it was very interesting that in this room, I would almost say there was a widely consensus that such a scheme would have advantages compared to the pure spending of government money to affected individuals or corporates after an event. And there was consensus as this is because a system like the ones Firma had suggested,
mm-hmm.
with our European resilience framework, where which is based on risk management and then supported by the insurance, so the private insurance sector,
yeah,
would provide the advantage that individuals and corporates are incentivized to do what they can to avoid or at least limit the impact of a systemic risk, be it a pandemic, be it cyber, you can name it. And the capabilities of the insurance industry to assess risks, price risks, and their capabilities in transferring those, dealing with claims.
Yeah.
This all will be kept available to deal with the impact of that kind of a strategic sort of systemic risk. Yeah. And this is important. And then, of course, there was also a huge consensus in the room that the private insurance sector cannot bear the financial consequences of a pandemic or other systemic risks. And therefore, there's a need for, if you like, the public, i.e. the governments, to support them financially on top of a certain layer, if you like. So I, having said that, I think the conversation is going on, and hopefully at a later stage, the policymakers will find the time to again look at it and see the advantages and do concrete steps to make this real. And of course, there's this other point that there are national solutions for risk like terror in some countries for nat cat exposures.
Yeah.
But I mean, we are still living in a globalized world, so these national solutions are just not fit for purpose for corporates whose activities are going cross-border. So a European solution would be much better. And of course, Firma will continue to argue in this direction. However, also at the European level, the European Commission is looking into the climate protection gap,
mm-hmm.
and is launching a climate resilience dialogue to address this protection gap with policymakers, insurers, and other stakeholders. And we have been, Firma has been invited to participate in this working group. And I mean, we are quite happy because this shows that we have gained a lot of credibility, in the past within the European Commission on the topic of protection gap and on the topic of public-private partnerships. So this also shows that the discussion at the European level is still ongoing, at least for the climate protection gap.
That's good. Well, that is good news because, you know, like as I intimated earlier, very easy to get wrapped up in the short-term crisis and forget about the big picture, climate change and energy being good examples of that. There are things happening, despite the crisis we're dealing with, and one of them is at a European level, the recent consultation on the Environmental Liability Directive, which took, it seemed, decades to create, caused a hell of a lot of discussion and a lot of words written about it. And again, one of these areas where law firms, etc., were suggesting gigantic impact on European corporations, etc., doesn't seem to have exploded in that way. Do you think, I mean, what are Firma's key messages on the ELD? And it, does it actually really need updating? Does it not already fit for purpose?
Yeah, our position, so Firma position on the ELD is no. Mm. It does not to be updated.
Right.
I think we are in particular not in favor of the European Commission pursuing a line of action that would require companies to take out mandatory financial security,
yeah,
which often means a mandatory insurance scheme, And then we are back to the old debate if mandatory insurance is a good thing. And we are back to our argument to say, no, the disadvantage of a mandatory scheme is that we'll discourage firms from taking the required prevention measures. And possibly disincentivize the pursuit of enterprise risk management. So in that sense, no, we are not in favor, and we do not see that that in particular that kind of an update will be helpful. And I think, as you rightly mentioned, the problem is that the current ALD has not really become life, if you like. So that's the other problem that we see across the European Union. Let's say the level of applicability, if you can say that, is very, very diverse. Which makes it always difficult for companies operating cross border. So I think we would be more in favor of having the European Commission to focus a little bit on a level playing field across Europe in that regard. And as a consequence of this, also there is not much experience, I would say, and understanding of what ELD means, in particular for SMEs. Not to blaming anyone, because as I said, it's also more a problem of the process of introduction, of proper introduction in individual member states. And if it's not applied, then why you should take care, right? So that's a little bit our view on the ELD revision.
Which makes a lot of sense to me. I'm thinking, absolutely, would totally agree with you. It needs to be implemented properly, and it needs to be done on a level playing field if it's going to achieve the great things that its creators hope that it would. Another obviously very topical area that hits the news headlines every day is corporate sustainability. And reporting. I mean, it's a complicated area, to be honest. You've got, as far as I can see, you've really got two main measures. You've got the corporate sustainability due diligence proposals, which is really about measuring and managing the risk within the supply chain, looking for human rights abuses, etc. And then you've also got the Corporate Sustainability Reporting Directive, the CSRD, which comes into play in January 2024. Could you perhaps talk a bit about Firma's view on both of these initiatives, how they will interact, if at all, and what role risk managers could and should be playing in this fast evolving area?
Well, I think firstly, and in general, Firma's views on both is in general positive. I think we agree that sustainability is a big issue. And the idea that corporates have to deal with that is and have to report on this is not the wrong idea. However, as often the devil is in the detail, right? And if you think about this due diligence, as many others, we also think that the concept of value chain is not precisely and clearly enough defined. And it's very, very broad. So it's not limited to a certain tier level, neither upstream or downstream, which makes it almost impossible for companies to really comply and to make sure that in this entire value chain, which is basically unlimited, there is absolutely no wrongdoing. And this creates an unacceptable level of potential liability. And this, the other thing is that, again, the liability frame, the civil liability framework amongst the member states is also problematic because it's also not completely harmonized. And this is an even more dramatic problem because the directive does not really give a clear definition of damage.
Right.
So the damage of the third party, which will be considered as a wrongdoing within the value chain, if you like, or caused by a wrongdoing, and creates then a liability. And if this is all not really clear, it becomes to a risk from the point of view of the corporates, which is almost impossible to manage and to mitigate. For the reporting directive, again, also positive. However, again, the devil is in the detail. The reporting directive is promoting this idea of double materiality, in a sense that an impact has to be reported if it has, or an event, if it has an impact on the corporate itself or on the environment, including personnel and so forth. The problem here is that materiality is not clearly defined again. And as this reporting has to be audited now, or in certain industries to be disclosed to, of course, certain external stakeholders, and their consent is needed to sign this off, basically, you will end up in endless debates. Of course, controversial, whether or not an event was material, either for the corporate or for the environment.
Right.
And this is, of course, not good, right? Same problem.
No.
Either you force corporates to basically report everything, because you can never rule out that that might, that that has not any kind of impact on a third party. Or people might say, I don't consider this to be material. And other might have, again, different opinions on this question. So that's also, in that sense, not fit for purpose at this point in time. However, of course, yes, I mean, to your question, these two directives will clearly closely interact. I think that's clear. And also it is clear that this will be something where risk managers will have to deal with going forward. But hopefully in a more clearer or based on more clearer guidance given from coming from lawmakers or in the commission.
Dirk, this is a complicated area. It's, as you just explained, big implications. Really need knowledge of the law, need knowledge of corporate governance rules, auditing politics. This is actually moving further and further away from the core insurance manager role of the past, isn't it? So is all of this change that we're talking about, this regulatory, this social, political change, is it actually going to force a division between the insurance management and enterprise risk management communities? Is that kind of an inevitable conclusion? Because if the insurance side is becoming more complicated at the same time. Do you see what I mean? Is that going to force a division, and then firma might have to have two sets of members, perhaps?
Well, I think we already have members which at least have a different, let's say, focuses on the daily work. We have people who are, focused and consider themselves as ERM people, and we have members who consider themselves as being insurance managers. Yeah. And then we have people who are saying they are risk and insurance managers. Yeah. In combination. And interestingly, this is one third, right?
Right.
But to your point, I think if you look into this and then just take this reporting or the due diligence as an example, this goes also, I would argue, way beyond ERM. You need to work with procurement, you need to work with legal, you need to work with, of course, your production managers and all that. So I think it comes back to the point that risk management, and we used to the term risk managers are risk conductors, right? So they their role is really to know where to go to seek for information, and likewise learn from their colleagues what is required by law, by the reporting standards and so on and so forth. And of course, they need to be able to adapt and to learn and to broaden their skills. But I think that the link between risk and then transfer of risks is still very, very strong. And therefore, personally, I mean, notwithstanding what I said in the beginning, but I think that we will not see a clear cut between risk management and insurance management going forward. And it will depend on which industry you're talking about, because there might be different tasks in the forefront than in other industries. So I think time will tell, of course, but my personal projection is not that we will see a complete cut between these two professions.
Okay, great. Finally, today, very topical. There's obviously captives, as we mentioned earlier, are more important than ever. A lot of FIRMA members are looking at using their captive more or creating one to help deal with this market. Unfortunately, there still seems to be a bit of a misunderstanding of what a captive is, perhaps at some levels, supervisors less so maybe. We have this work that the OECD is doing on BEPS that you made comments on today. There's a potential that national rulemakers, it seems, could, on the basis of what the OECD is saying at the moment, actually not view captives in as favorable a light as they should be, and they could end up being threatened with higher taxes possibly. What could and should the EC, supervisors, national governments be actually be doing to help promote the use of captives? Because it's a tricky area.
As I said earlier, it's not an easy task to set up a captive.
Yeah.
And it's also not an easy task to operate a captive. Because as in particular within the European Union, captives are fully exposed to Solvency II. It's really burdensome. It's not just financially burdensome, but also from a workload perspective. So the administration work, the reporting work, and all that. I think we are to some extent used to it. However, we are still fighting for a more proportional regulation for captives, for Pillar 1 and as well as for Pillar 2. And there's always the same argument. We say that captives are less risky operations. Mm-hmm. And typically, they do have financially the full backing of their mother companies. So a lot of argumentation why traditional insurance companies should be heavily regulated might not be one by one applicable for captives. I think we think we were successful because we managed throughout the French presidency, so in the first half of this year, to convince at least the rapporteur that captives should be classified as low risk profile undertakings. And then consequentially get some relief on reporting requirements and so forth. So again, to promote this idea of a more proportional regulation for captives. And I mean, I think it's fair to say that the deal is not yet done, of course, but I think we managed to get the discussion in the right direction. And this is helpful and took us a lot of effort in several meetings with the French Treasury and so forth, and of course EP members. But we consider this really to be a little bit of a big breakthrough, also in the perception of what captives are doing and what captives distinguish, so to speak, from other traditional insurers. Yeah, and then you know you mentioned the consultation of the latest OECD report on BEPS, which in that sense is a little bit of a setback because the OECD is again a little bit suspicious about captives, denied, so to speak, that captives are regulated financial services operations, which as a consequence means that we will not enjoy certain advantages which other financial institutions which are regulated are getting granted, so to speak. Of course, we are a little bit we are certainly disappointed. And we also, in particular for the European captives, again, as I just mentioned, fully exposed to the Solvency II regulation, it is very difficult to understand how the OECD could come to this conclusion and argue that we are not a regulated financial services operation captives. I mean, that sounds a little weird. But we just today issued a press release and sharing our opinion on this one. So I mean, all in all, captives are important, and we will continue to promote them as a risk management tool, and of course, likewise, to fight for a more appropriate regulation within the Solvency II framework. But again, coming back to this, to the point I made earlier, given the complexity of setting up a captive, operating a captive, it's not a perfect tool for SMEs, I would say, and that means we must not forget to also focus on things where and to strengthen the traditional insurance market, to also make sure that the needs of the SMEs for proper risk transfer solutions are met going forward.
Well, you certainly have a lot on your plate since you've taken the presidency on, Dirk. It's been quite a dramatic period, and the firm has actually hit some pretty good successes and continues to work hard in different areas. Well done on that, and I really hope. I hope that the forum is a big success over in Copenhagen, which I'm sure it will be. There'll be a cracking turnout. And I look forward to seeing you there. Thank you very much for taking part in the interview. And look forward to seeing you in Copenhagen.